Happy Saturday, Nashville. Hey, how we doing here? Four's Company, Nick Frazier alongside Connor Newt, and the reporter Nick Keezer over at the ice rink today for the Future Stars game for the Preds. Nick, how you doing? You got us?
Yeah, absolutely. I thought you were taking us off there, Dr. Crane.
No, I was just, finding
some headphones. We thought it was you.
Hey, okay.
It's fine. I was just trying to get my headphones all situated because I lost my backpack.
And I've only been casual fashion this morning.
Yes, casual fashion. It's somewhere in the studio, but we'll find it. But, yeah, another week along with a minimal sports, I guess you could say the dead period for the most part. And now we're here on Saturday and enjoying the high life. Whatever.
Yeah,
we got
fellas.
Going.
Yeah,
what,
glad that
Wimbledon. We got some F1, some wrestling. Connor, how about that?
Money in the bank tonight.
Money in the bank.
Cannot wait.
And obviously some baseball along for the ride. So Paul Skeens was on the mound yesterday. 8 strikeouts and only 2 hits and I think 7 innings. So that's pretty crazy. But Nick, you're at the rink. Give us a little rundown what's going on over there.
Yeah, fellas. We've got the prospect showcase this afternoon, or I should say this morning. By the time the game starts, it'll probably be around 11 a.m. So yeah, the draftees from last week are here in town. I've been watching them all week and they look pretty good. A lot of the guys are confident, and this week has been all about learning the system, learning what it means to be a Nashville Predator. The standard is that phrase being thrown out there for the guys this week. So yeah, come out. We're down here at Bellevue. We should be getting things started here at 10:30. Our show will end a little bit early so we can get to the festivities with Jay Moore as the analyst, and the very fabulous Pete Weber will be calling the game. So that's where I'm at right now as we get ready for the showcase this afternoon.
All righty. Perfect. I may or may not stroll down there in a little bit, just depending on my gas tank, first off.
It's right in my neighborhood. You can carpool.
There we go. Mm-hmm. Yeah, let's carpool. How about that? But yeah, a lot to cover today on the show. We're going to get in some Preds, obviously, some college football, some NFL. I mean, this is right up everybody's alley. It's the middle of the summer.
Yeah, it is. And look, we want to know as well how your 4th of July was. And one question I thought of, and it's our question of the day this morning, guys. I want to get right to it. Text us at 615-737-1025. And I thought of this because there were some really great choices at my parents' house among about 30 people that made one dessert apiece. But text us the best pie to have on the 4th of July. That is our question of the day. What is the best pie?
Pie?
On the 4th of July. Yes.
You eat pie on 4th of July?
Yes, man.
That's a thing?
Yes.
Okay. What kind of pie did you have, Nick? I'm just curious.
Well, I had several. I had key lime. I had apple. I had chess pie. I tried a bunch. There was way too many to keep track of, honestly.
Okay. Well, I did not have any pie. I had me some
Apple pie?
No apple pie, man. No apple pie. I had me some skews with some steak and chicken on it, and that was my dessert.
Skews.
Yeah,
I love skews. I love the skews.
It's delicious.
Oh, my goodness.
And I didn't have any pie either. I didn't know that was a thing for 4th of July.
I mean, key lime pie, yeah. I could see that, but no.
If you got to hold me to one, it's cherry. That's the only answer.
Cherry pie?
Wow. Cherry pie, warmed up, vanilla ice cream on top.
Well, with that being said, we're on the food topic. Give us a little nutrition. What was on nutrition?
This morning?
Oh, my gosh.
We're mixing it up. Honeycomb today.
Honeycomb? Honeycomb.
Why'd you change it?
Because that's what Mom bought.
Okay. How about it?
Connor is a child on our show, and we're just here to support him through his nutrition endeavors.
Well, if he's the child, then I'm the biggest baby on planet Earth because I love me some cereal, especially some Honey Nut cereal, all that.
Honey Nut Cheerio. That's my favorite, man.
Yeah, those are good. Hey, Raisin Bran. Call me an 85-year-old man, but
okay,
Raisin
Bran.
Okay,
so there's this new brand I've been trying. It's great. It's called Smart Start. All right?
What?
It's somewhat nutritious, actually.
Okay.
It's like wheat and like cornflakes together.
Interesting.
It's really good.
What are you, 85?
Hey,
man.
I just said I'm the oldest 25-year-old you ever meet. I mean, Connor's wrapped that alley there. So.
Hey, man.
I guess.
If I'm 85, I'm a healthy 85-year-old.
Exactly.
I guess.
We got some headlines this week, gentlemen. Nick, we'll start with you.
Yeah. First and foremost, I thought this was a pretty interesting one. I'm going to try to find it really quickly. Now, obviously, the NBA draft was not that long ago, but I want to go back to some March Madness magic and I want to pull it up because if I remember correctly, there was one gentleman that kind of tore things up for his team, and that would be one Jack Golke, by the way. And he got to sign a PTO, and he signed with the Oklahoma City Thunder. So I like a cool story where he said in a press conference by himself, without being prompted, he's like, I'm not going to make it to the NBA. This is my last shot, and I have to make the most of it. And obviously, things didn't work out for him. But the fact that now, a year later, he said that, and now he's in the NBA, he's getting his shot. I just like a good story, fellas. That was something that stood out to me earlier this week.
Okay. Connor?
I'll go with the obvious. It's been a little overblown this week with a big week from the Predators, but we got a new SEC, fellas.
Oh,
we got 16
right.
teams. Texas and Oklahoma on July 1st are officially in the SEC. And I mean, it still looks weird to me seeing, you know, the SEC logo on the Texas Longhorns field.
Yeah,
or
it
like,
does.
The patches. I mean, I guess they kind of did photo shoots before that, obviously, with, you know, College Football 25 coming out here in about, 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Less than that. But, you know, Quinn Ewers is on the cover. He had the SEC patch on. And I'm excited for this new era of SEC football. I think it's going to be fun. I think it's going to be interesting with no divisions. Anyone can come out on top.
And the biggest question of it all, and everybody will know this question, who is the real UT?
Exactly. Question. There's
is
no answer
Tennessee
right now.
Or is it Texas?
We don't know yet.
And that will be the running narrative throughout all of the SEC this season and seasons to come. As for that, with my headline, I'm going to the Diamond. I'm going to be looking at the Cardinals game. Sonny Gray had himself a nice game last night. I think he had, what, 5 strikeouts? Is that right? Let's double check that real quick. Let's see here. We have Sonny Gray. Yeah, he had 6 strikeouts. Excuse me. So, I mean, a 3.3 ERA, not too shabby.
Cy Young sleeper, do you think?
Maybe. I just feel like the new era of MLB baseball, it's a little different. It's like anything sub 3 is really good. And as we hear Zambonis in the background.
I love the Zambonis.
Love the Zambonis. Brings a little ambiance to the show here today. But, yeah, no, I think sub 3 is probably in the ballpark range of a solid pitcher. You know, so that's where I'm going with that. But, yeah, Sonny Gray, local product. Another 6 strikeout game, pretty good. So that's where I'm at. But as for that, we're off and running today on Forrest Company. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit of Preds, a little bit of other things in hockey for the most part, some free agency signings that happened this past week, and much more. Yo, stay tuned in on Forrest Company on 102.5 and 106.3, the game. And we're back here on Forrest Company on 102.5 and 106.3 The Game. Hey, tune in to 102.5 The Game tomorrow for coverage of the Grant Park 165. Coverage will begin at 2:30 with races starting at 3:30. Coverage also is available on the 102.5 The Game app and the 102.5thegame.com. And as for that, we actually have a caller already. I believe that is Adam. Adam, what you got for us, man?
I was waiting for you guys to start talking about the Preds, man. It's pretty wild what happened this week. In my eyes, man, I've been a big Nashville sports fan for 25-30 years, man, and this, like, just the feeling in the air in Nashville is pretty wild to me right now, just because I've had moments through the years where I felt like the Titans were going for it or the Preds were going for it. It's never been to this extent with either team and at the same time. So just seeing, I mean, you see Steven Stamkos is such a big signing, Merchisaw, whatever, like all these guys. Shea might be the biggest signing, like sleeper of the three, but like they're all so good. And then like you see what the Titans have done too, like spending money. So I'm just really excited about our teams this year, man. That's what I got to say.
I appreciate the call, Adam. Thank you. I'm right with you on the sentiment there. I'm right with them on the sentiment there. Yeah, I would love to get Nick's answer on this. Nick, do you agree with Adam on that point?
Yeah, I think it's a pretty fair point to make. I was actually listening back to the Barry Trotz interview with Willie and D-Mace, which if you've not heard that and you're on the way to the rink right now, go check it out on anywhere that you get your podcasts. Great insight. But I think Adam has a point in regards to it being one of the best off seasons. And I briefly heard that call. We were actually testing out the anthem here, so I could partially hear his call. But, yeah, I mean, look, Brady Shea was brought in. I heard that part. Brady Shea was kind of brought in to be the long-term, you know, best defenseman, because Roman Yossi's got 4 years left on his contract, so the Predators are playing it safe by adding a guy like that, knowing that he's good long-term for years and years to come. And not only that, they add Steven Stamkos, a proven commodity in the NHL, and then you also got Jonathan Marchessault as well. So it has definitely been a busy offseason. They have spent so much more money than I have ever seen them spend in free agency, especially on day one. I think before 10:30 or 11:30 in the morning, they were spending, I think it was a total of $100 million, I want to say, something like that. It was $110 million from what I have in my notes. And they ended up combining with the Titans at the end of the day. The two franchises this offseason have spent over $336 million this offseason. So think about that with what you will.
Well, I will say, I mean, Adam did point out he's excited for both teams here in Nashville, but just to my vantage point, I think the Preds are in a better spot than the Titans right now, personally.
I would agree.
Absolutely.
With you.
I just think that the Preds, obviously, people would say they're going for it. I mean, when you sign a guy like Stamkos, I'd say so. But just my only, I guess, hesitation with these signings is you're only going to get about a solid 3 years out of them.
The window is... It's a wide window,
yes.
I feel, but it's a short one, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, you sign them to long-term deals for the most part, and then you're going to only get about three-ish years out
of it. You said it yourself. I think it was last week. Stamkos has a solid two to three years on him.
Yeah, I say two solid years, three if you can squeak one out of him. That's kind of what I'm...
Do you think it's really just a few years like that?
Yeah, I do. I personally do. I mean, he's
interesting.
He's 34.
Yeah.
I think you can get two solid years out of him, make it at 36. And then you know what? If he can still produce at 36, he'd be a third-line guy.
I'm going to say this. I think Marchessault might be the sneakiest pickup they grabbed. I think that might be the most solid, well-rounded player all around. Longevity-wise, he's a 40-goal scorer. So is Stamkos. But you stick him on the power play. Stamkos, too, obviously.
Sure.
You stick both of those guys on the power play. That fixes all your problems from last year.
Well, I would say this, too. It's not a coincidence that this guy, Steven Stamkos, has gotten to 80 points consistently throughout his entire career. And just this season alone, if I may add, there were only about 30 guys that got the 80 points. Now, it's a scoring league. The goaltending is catching up, I think, to the talent at hand for sure. But I think, you know, that's a good sign that even in his later 30s, he's continuously being one of the best guys in the league. And that's what you want to see, right? Because he's a guy that had 51, and then you also had a year where he had 60 goals. And so he's hit 100 points one time. He's hit 90 multiple times as well, over five times, I want to say. So, I mean, guys, he's a proven guy. And quite frankly, this is a bigger signing to me than what Ryan O'Reilly was to Nashville last year.
Really? Jonathan Marchessault, you believe he's a bigger signing than
No, I think Steven Stamkos is.
Oh, Stamkos.
Yeah.
I'd agree.
But I think overarchingly, this offseason, we've never had before. This is a first-time reaction for everybody seeing how much money they've spent, how much talent they've brought in, but also, more importantly, what the plan is. You know, Willie has talked about this plan for so long, and now it's a new general manager in Barry Trotz, and he has completely taken it over and done a fabulous job so far, especially on top of the signees. They have added draft capital as well. They have two first-round picks next year. So the way I look at it is they are set up nice for the future, fellas.
Let me ask you this, Keezer. I really want to get your thoughts on this. What do these signings, you know, Stamkos, Marchessault, what do those mean for pending RFAs? Or I guess they are RFAs now, like, you know, Juuso Parsonen is an RFA. Philip Tomasino is an RFA. Mark Delgado, guys like that. What does that mean for their likelihood to make the opening day roster or even be back in Milwaukee next season?
I think what that does is you've got a couple of talented skaters. The one guy I'm sure of that has a future here in Nashville, I would say, is Juuso Parsonen. I mean, look at how young he is and how much time he's already spent in the NHL. And he's been one of the more physical guys at times. And he, if he uses that size more often, we know what kind of talent he has. By golly, he scored a goal between his legs one season ago and had so much charisma and confidence. And I think he continued to showcase that in Milwaukee as well. And I don't think he's a sure thing on, you know, opening day roster, quite frankly, just yet. I think we've yet to see what that's going to look like, because there might be some pretty stiff competition at training camp, Connor. And obviously yesterday, one note I have in our show is that, look, Spencer Stastny elected for arbitration yesterday. So he's going to be getting paid, you know, essentially he's not worth $800,000 or $870,000 for the Nashville Predators. And quite frankly, I think he deserves more than that as well. He's probably going to get over at least $1 million, and he's only going to be given a 1 or 2 year contract, obviously, from the arbiter when they go and visit with them. So, but I think Tomasino is more of the guy in question here, because he's had trouble staying in the lineup. Andrew Burnett, quite frankly, shared his straight up thoughts at the end of the season. We all know what he said there, where they have to see more from a guy like that. So out of those three, Connor, that's what I would have to say. And Yusso Parsonen, I feel like, is a big piece to this puzzle in the roster long term for the next 5 years.
I mean, absolutely. I mean, I can't disagree with that for the most part. I mean, you're going to add a guy like that, and then on top of it, just the youth keeps on building. I've been saying this for the last 3 to 4 weeks since the show's been going on. Invest in the youth, bring in a couple vets. Learn under
the
vets.
It's the key to success.
It's the key to success. That is the recipe for success. That's how I've been looking at it.
Those are guys I'm curious about, though. Parsonen, I feel like, needs to step it up in training camp.
Sure.
Tommy Novak is one of those guys.
Sure.
Philip Tomasino, although the more I think about it, and I've been kind of an advocate for Tomasino in the past, I think the door's closing.
Yeah.
A little bit.
I think the oak tree door is kind of slowly.
Well, I don't know if you guys were listening to the part where Barry told Willie and Derek that he's going to have to move some more assets out of the roster here in town soon. So when that is, I think we're going to see that move closer to training camp or at training camp, because Barry Trotz also talked about how Scott Wedgwood is another player that's been kept in limbo, because if Askarov knocks their socks off, to quote Barry Trotz, you could see Scott Wedgwood either go through waivers or get traded. I mean, just imagine that and being okay with that plan. So I would want to pick Scott's brain on that for sure. But I think more importantly, the conversation is, who are the Predators going to trade? And what are they going to get for that, too? Are they going to get future considerations and a bag of pucks? Possibly, because as Cody Glass has told me time and time again, he'd like to be here. He would like to be part of this future long term. I mean, he was really excited about Marchessault because that was one of his first teammates ever, by the way. So could, you know, Cody Glass possibly be someone they hold on to? Is Dante Fabbro a guy that they go ahead and move on from, too? I think with the Predators keeping Spencer Stastny, that leaves in question for me, why would you keep Dante Fabbro? I think Fabbro's future is more in question, and he might be a guy at training camp where if the Predators know what they already have and they could maybe get a draft pick for him, something for him, then I think they should probably do it in my books.
You know, if they were to flip an asset like that, you know, a Fabbro, and get, as you said, a bag of pucks, I think I'd be okay with that. Look at all the assets they have right now. I think next year, Barry said they have, what, 2 firsts?
Yeah.
3 seconds, something like that. That's a lot. And they're not going to use all that next year. There's no way.
And quite frankly, I don't think they're going to possibly use both of their firsts. Look at what kind of year that they might have. If this team gets to March, and this is a big what if, you know, what if they get to March and they are one of the top 5 teams in the league? What do you do then? Do you buy and go get a pending UFA that's been tearing it up all year? I mean, you could use that draft capital and really utilize the talent that's on the market.
Oh, you buy.
Yeah, I bet say you buy. I mean, if it gets to that point, do you go after, I guess, a And we're just really looking to the future here. And, Nick, please help me with this. Looking that far in the future, if they're a top-five team by the trade deadline, do you go after a forward or a defenseman? Like, what would be the, I guess, recipe for success? Say, let's just put a hypothetical out there.
Sure,
say the power play is working perfectly the way it should.
Yeah.
Say the Preds are averaging about 4.5 goals a game.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, obviously, that's not happening.
Plan the parade.
I know. I'm just throwing that out there. But if something like that were to happen, do you go after a defenseman or a forward at that point?
I think you would have to look at who's injured – or who is a little nicked up at the time. No pun intended for you and I, Frazier, nicked up. But I think that you probably would want to look at maybe defense first. Maybe for me. I'm not the GM. I would want to look at defense. I still think the Predators could be a little bit more stout on defense. Look at who made the Stanley Cup final this year. Those are two teams that stood on their heads defensively at times. Now, Florida more than Edmonton for sure. Edmonton was trying to give them all that they had in those last four games, and Florida was a damn good defensive team. They also had Sergei Bobrovsky, but could the Predators kind of be a team modeled like the Panthers? I mean, their defense was phenomenal. They blocked shots. They got in those lanes. And quite frankly, I think the Predators are just as good at that, if not better, when they're on their A game. So could they look at defense and go, all right, we could possibly upgrade here, but could Luke Shen, could Spencer Stastny be a great duo by then? Quite possibly. One of them might be hurt. But also, too, on offense, how can you round out the bottom six? That's my main question. If one of the younger guys isn't doing what they need to do, then you might want to ask yourself, either let's keep this guy scratched and let's add a guy on forward that's a pending UFA or a pending RFA, and then you move on from him, or you move on from that prospect and keep that player. There's a lot of what-ifs, but we're looking way too far ahead right now. But I think that's a good thing to think about in terms of, all right, you got three hot donuts off the market, and when everything cools off later off this season, what's the next batch going to end up just ultimately, what's it going to end up looking like for this franchise?
I mean, how can you not look that far into the future? I mean, this team just on paper looks like they could win a Stanley
Loaded.
Cup.
Top Loaded. To bottom.
So, I mean, yeah, I agree with Nick. Yeah, we are looking a bit far into the future here. But as for that, we'll continue this Preds topic a little bit into the next segment, along with some NFL stuff as well. So, thanks for listening to 1025 The Game and Forrest Company, and we'll be back with more on the other side.
I was out at the NHL draft in Las Vegas, talked to a lot of hockey people, and they tell me that the tampering with the upcoming free agents, meaning this past week, is just rampant in the league. That, you know, there's ways to get around the tampering rules by, you know, talking to the agents through a third party or whatever you want to do. And the problem with there isn't a whistleblower in the league because everybody's doing it. Ken Holland, who is no longer with the Oilers, but if he was the GM of the Oilers, that puts him, and Bill Zito from the Florida Panthers, the hole that that puts them in as far as preparing for the draft and preparing for free agency. You can't tell me that all that plethora of players that were signed on July 1st, that they negotiated with and came to an agreement with.
And that was Neil Smith, former NHL GM and president. You know, Neil made a good point there about just tampering in general with the NHL. I mean, it's kind of the wild, wild west. And then as for the NFL, it's a little bit different. So, Nick, elaborate a little bit more on the NHL tampering for the most part.
Yeah, I wanted to raise this question this morning, not because there's any suspicion with any of the signings from this offseason, but I think it begs the question of, is there a problem with that in the league that is not being talked about as much? And in my books, he kind of went on and talked more about how teams that went to the finals this year, Edmonton and Florida, they're behind the eight ball ultimately because they have to scramble. They have to get to the draft in Vegas. They have to assess who they're going to sign in free agency. But more importantly, who are they going to re-sign for their team as well? So, I mean, we'll see what happens. I'm not 100% positive on, you know, how much this really has impacted the NHL as a whole. I mean, going back to 2009, looking back at what had happened there, the Vancouver Canucks were looking at the Sedin twins, and they didn't know what they were going to do with them quite yet. And there was someone in Toronto, and it was the coach of the Maple Leafs and or the GM at the time, and they had kind of talked about how they would like the idea of if they could go talk to the Sedins that offseason. And so the league came out. They actually punished Toronto for talking about that before July 1st. So that's why speculation is the best thing to do during the time before free agency. And that's what we do as a show. We speculate around a lot of different things, right, guys? And I think it's worth thinking about of it's about who you know. And in this business that we're doing, even for radio, and it is for pro sports as well. And obviously, there's the Rooney rules, and then you look at the NHL, and it's not talked about. How much tampering could there possibly be that's going on, and how much does that actually, you know, affect the market long term? And how do those general managers ultimately approach free agency? And, you know, their inner circles do that quite a bit. Like you said in that clip, Neil is right on the money. They talk quite a bit, especially at those drafts and at those combines and whatever else it may be. What do you guys think about that one approach there?
I will say, like, to the point of the tampering aspect, like, correct me if I'm wrong, Nick, but this year in the NHL free agency, it was like the most money spent, right?
Yes, on the first day it was.
So with that being said, like, there, it just baffles my brain that there wasn't any tampering that went on, not with just one team, but like a handful of teams around the league.
It's like college football. Like, now we have NIL and stuff,
right,
which is technically it's legal to pay players.
Yeah,
but like
legal tampering, basically.
Legal tampering, but everyone's doing it.
Right.
It's not this under-the-nose thing that we don't know about. I mean, the organizations can try to hide it, but we know it's going on. I'm not saying that the Preds absolutely tampered, but it is a little eye-opening to me that they land, you know, three of
marquee names
in the top of the list in free agency in one day.
Right.
Not just one day, it was within an hour.
Yeah. But also, I will say this, and Nick, please elaborate on this as well, but the tax in Tennessee, there's no state income tax for the most part.
Yeah, exactly.
So like you're going to go along with that. It's going to be a hotbed for people and players to come to Nashville.
Yeah.
That's the key point in all this puzzle here.
It's a growing city.
Right. And so to the point of the tampering aspect, maybe the Preds were not one of those teams that were in that little tampering little, I guess, bubble. It could have been more teams around the NHL.
I am curious, though, what's the NHL's policy on tampering? I know, like, the NFL, when you tamper, we saw it this past offseason, you know, Atlanta tampers to get Kirk Cousins as their quarterback, and, you know, the Eagles tamper to get Saquon Barkley as their running back. And
right,
that caused them to lose, you know, funds and a few draft picks, I think. And
yeah.
I'm curious, does the NHL have a strict policy on that, or is it just kind of a, you know, slip it under the rug, don't let anyone know kind of thing?
So here's what I know, and I've got the illustrious Pete Weber next to me, and if he's listening, he can probably correct me. But with tampering in the NHL, I think there can't be any conversations technically before July 1st. They all technically have to happen on July 1st. There has to be talk between the player, the agent, and the organization of where that player is going to go. And that's why when I was telling that story earlier about the Maple Leafs, that there was ultimately a problem with them saying, hey, we're interested in the Sedins, and that was before July 1st, right? So for me, at least, that's the way I was approaching things in this conversation. Was I wasn't 100% positive on what that might look like in the off season. So could that maybe mean that there would be some tampering issues because it wasn't free agency just yet? So that's yet to be seen. But ultimately, guys, I think there needs to be more clarification on what tampering could be in the NHL. And I could just be missing it, but I thought it might be worth discussing ultimately because the Preds had a huge splash. And so are there better rules and regulations that could be in place? Because Barry Trotz, he knows his people, as we all know.
He sure does. He's been in the league for quite some time. He's brought in some familiar names to this team. And
And he did a good job, at least on our station and around the media, of staying away from that tampering. You know, us as journalists, we're supposed to ask these questions, you know, what about this guy? And you saw that come up a lot with, you know, Mitch Marner and guys like that. And Trotz handled himself well. He said, like, you know, I can't say anything about that. He did name drop him at one point here on this station.
Yeah.
He didn't directly use that name. And credit to him. I mean, he's had a heck of an off season. And by no means are we saying, you know, the Preds are tampering. Absolutely not.
No.
But I'm just saying it goes on today across all leagues.
True, true. But today at 10:30 when we hop off the air, we'll see hear the future Stars game right here on 102.5 The Game later on today. Nick will already, he's already there, so Nick can kind of give us a little rundown of that on Twitter and or just talk about it now on the air. So
yeah, absolutely. I just dropped the roster on my Twitter. I'm at Keezer Nick, so go check out who is on what team today. I will say one thing that I really like about these rosters early on. You've got a really healthy mix of the new guys that just got drafted last week and some guys that were here last year as well. You got Tanner Mullendike is going to be on the same team as Kalen Lind, and those are two guys that I think I've enjoyed some the most of during this week and just watching these guys. And then also for Team Blue, because that was Team Gold. For Team Blue, I really liked the idea of putting Jeremy Hansel back there with also Dylan McKinnon and Anton Olsen. And there's some other guys as well that are all invites. All four invites there are eight invites, and they have evenly split them. It's 5-4, actually. Sorry, there are 9 invites at camp. So they've kind of split them up pretty evenly. So I'm anticipating a pretty well-balanced matchup. So if you come down here, there's a good crowd that's gathering here so far. You'll see some good hockey here this afternoon here down here in Bellevue.
Love it. I love it indeed. Well, hey, next on the docket, you ready, Newt?
I'm so ready.
It's time for Newt's Notes coming up. And we'll see you on the other side here on Force Company, right here on 102.5 and 106.3 The Game. Welcome back to Force Company, right here at 102.5 and 106.3 The Game. It is time for Newt's Notes. Connor Newt, the producer slash host. What do you have for
it? It's the speaker.
Yes, you're right. The speaker.
Big Joe's around here listening. We gotta hold the name.
He's giving you a nice moniker of the speaker. Yes, it is Connor Newt, a.k.a. the host, a.k.a. the producer, a.k.a. the speaker. So what do you have for us for Newt's Notes?
Okay, well.
Don't slack off, Connor.
You know what? Okay. So
talk to us.
Let me talk to you. As I said earlier in the show, we are 2 weeks away from college football 25. But that's not what this is about. Sort of. Well, it is. So college football 25 released their, you know, their stadium rankings and stuff.
Yes.
Controversial. On3, who I love On3, released their stadium ranking. Controversial. So I've decided, let me release my SEC stadium rankings, and we'll see if it's controversial or not.
Okay.
I have right here in the palm of my hand on this iPhone 15, the top, well, there are only 16, but
continue.
The 16 SEC stadiums ranked, and we will go through them one by one. Are you ready?
I'm ready. Let's do it.
Nick Keezer, are you ready?
Maybe. Go ahead.
Do you want to start from number one or number 16?
16.
Let's go 16. 16. Yeah.
You know what number.
Don't you dare say it.
It's Vanderbilt.
Is it?
It's First Bank Stadium.
Is it?
The environment's not there.
I think with this new stadium and
we'll
the video
see.
Game, it's going to be
this
phenomenal.
This is right now.
Oh, right now. Oh,
and yeah. This is real life.
Okay.
Not the game.
Unfortunately, they have the downward slope there because they're still building. I mean,
yeah.
That's an easy knock.
So what I'm
continue.
What I'm factoring in here is the stadium as a whole and the environment they bring.
Okay.
The stadium is not there completely.
Not yet.
Right. The environment, it's there for the other team.
Fair.
If Vanderbilt's playing Tennessee at home, 75% of that crowd is going to be orange.
Okay. What you got for 15?
15, we have Ferret Field at Memorial Stadium, a.k.a. Missouri. Mm-hmm. Now, Missouri is on the up, the
they're
uptrend.
On the upswing.
They're on
yes.
the upswing. The environment's getting there, but traditionally and historically, it's not there. It's just not. No discredit to any team on the lower rank, because my team is on the lower side. Up next, it's Reynolds Razorback Stadium. That's Arkansas. That one's a little controversial, because that's a tough place to play when they're good. Right now, they're not good. They're not good. They're kind of, you know, sliding off.
Now they're on the downswing.
They're on the downswing.
Yeah, that's what you say.
The downswing. And up next, it's my team.
Oh, boy.
The Kroger, as I call it. Kroger Field in Lexington, Kentucky, the home of the Kentucky Fire. The home of the Wildcat. You people sleep on the Kroger.
Oh, boy.
I mean, it gets a lot of hate. It's because historically, Kentucky football is not.
They like to burn couches out.
They like to.
It's all right.
It's fun. I've never been personally, but that's my. It's on the bucket. It's no Rupp Arena. We'll say that. It's
football.
But it's football, and Kentucky fans love sports.
They do.
So they all come out.
Especially the last couple of years.
Oh,
have
yeah.
been different.
They've been trying the upswing.
There you
we'll
go.
We'll call it
the upswing. Love it.
Especially when they're playing a rival like Kroger Field. The last week of November, mm-hmm. playing Louisville.
I bet you and Jared have fun chatting.
I don't think Jared knows.
Oh.
I'm blue.
Well.
And I don't think I want to know.
He now knows. Continue with your list, please.
Up next, Vaught Hemingway Stadium. One you know very well, Ole Miss. Also underrated. I've been there. It's great.
I'm kind of liking the list.
It's great.
I haven't heard a team yet.
But this is the SEC. There's tradition.
Well, they shake the little pom-poms in
the
stands.
The little pom-poms and all the frat boys.
Not your cup of tea.
Now, the Grove is awesome.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Grove's great.
You would love it.
Yeah. Grove is great.
You've been there. Right?
I have experience.
Yeah. Okay. Yes. The food is phenomenal. You
tailgating in the SEC is completely different.
Come on, Connor. Let's move along, Maine.
Oh, he's moving. Don't you
move
worry.
Move along. I got time, brother.
He's got time.
I got some time.
You got 15 minutes, basically. Yeah.
Plenty of time.
That's a lot of time.
Continue, please.
Up next at number 11. This one might be a little controversial.
Oh.
Gaylord Family, Oklahoma State. In Oklahoma. The tradition is there.
Yes.
But it's a small state.
Interesting.
It's small. And it's new to the SEC.
Sometimes, but I will say, sometimes with the stadiums like that that are super small, not super small, but smaller than others, I feel like the atmosphere is better because. Wouldn't you agree? Pack the house there.
If it's a packed house.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I want to see. Is the Red River rivalry in Oklahoma this year, or is it in Texas?
Always.
Or no, it's neutral. Yeah, you're right.
Always.
But yeah, that's going to be a play. With yes. an SEC crowd. Oh. Speaking of new SEC teams, uh-oh. Number 10, Darrell K. Royal, Texas Memorial Stadium.
Wow.
Texas.
That popped your top 10.
They cracked the top 10. That's
okay.
A little controversial, but I mean, I'm curious to see how this looks in a new SEC environment. Texas has great fans, but the thing that makes me mad about Texas fans is they get so, like, it's like you killed their dog when you do horns down. It's,
I got,
yeah, which, if they make that a penalty.
Oh, no, it's going to be great. It's going to be,
awesome.
It's not going to be a no penalty. Yeah.
Here you go. Here you go, Fridge.
Uh-oh.
Number 9.
Really? 9?
Davis Wade.
Come on. Give me a little top 5. Are you really going to put Bryant Denny Stadium in top 5?
Yeah. The Cowbells are just too much.
Cowbells, baby. That
too much?
Be number 1 in SEC lists right there. The Cowbells are deafening.
Cowbells.
I don't care what anybody says. I've been to Davis Wade Stadium. I have sat
the Cowbells
in that crowd.
To me are like the Vandy Whistler in baseball.
No, absolutely not.
They piss everyone off unless you're a Mississippi State Bulldog.
Incomparable.
Look, I bet. Look, I guarantee you the Vols are not even in the top 5, and their atmosphere is second to none.
Oh, don't tease here, Connor.
We'll see.
Oh, okay.
We'll see.
But as for this, I'll say my statement about the Davis Wade Stadium, the Bulldogs. Don't you dare disrespect the Maroon.
Okay.
At least they're in the top 10.
This is the Ole Miss in me.
By goodness gracious, they should be in the top 5.
This is the Ole Miss Rebels in me.
I am glad. I'm glad you did put them above Ole Miss. So thank you.
Okay.
We'll continue.
The next one. Should we play a little sandstorm here? Williams-Brice Stadium,
wow.
University of South Carolina. That's an electric app.
Okay.
And they suck.
Yeah, that's valid.
But, you know, they do the 2001 thing with Cocky, I think his name is, the mascot. And then, of course, Sandstorm is electric, the white towels waving.
The white towels.
Oh, I love it. At number seven, this is going to be controversial. Mm. And I've been saying, this one, this is who EA Sports had as their number one environment in the entire game. Kyle Field, Texas A&M.
Thank you. Goodness gracious. Overrated.
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 Great atmosphere.
I can't do it.
But that's a cult.
Yeah, but that cultist environment is just too much.
Yeah, yeah, it's too much.
I totally agree with you.
Thank
you.
Yeah.
It's just everything's bigger in Texas, and I feel like that's why they did it. And I'm just like, you know what? Stop it.
Yeah.
Just stop it.
The thing is, like, they do military school things, but they're not a military school. Don't tell their fans that. They'll get really upset. But, yeah, I digress. Number six, Jordan-Hare Stadium in Auburn.
That's fair.
That's a great one. Yeah. They suck right now. They're on the upswing, though, with Hugh Freeze as the coach. But that is a tough place to play.
Yeah.
We saw it last year in the Iron Bowl. That was the fourth in Milroe. He throws it to, what's his name? He transferred to Texas.
Oh, I'm drawing a blank. But yes, I know the play. It was fourth and a mile, and he threw it in the back of the end zone and caught it.
The Iron Bowl is one of my favorite games the entire year because no matter where they're playing, it is fun.
Now, before we get to the rest of your list, I'm curious, for rivalry's sakes, Red River rivalry and the Iron Bowl, what ranks over, what reigns supreme?
Iron Bowl.
Still Iron Bowl, right?
Iron Bowl.
Okay, just want to make sure.
The number one rivalry in college football is always going to be Michigan.
Absolutely. I would not be the same without Kenny Adams yelling at her, like yelling at the TV down the hallway.
Oh, I miss you, Kenny.
That's the top rivalry, Michigan and Ohio State.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, boy. All right. Continue. No comment.
We're in the top five.
Uh-oh.
And at number five, Bryant-Denny Stadium in Alabama.
Okay. I'm glad you didn't put them at one.
No, they're not number one. No. There's a clear number one.
Okay.
But that's a fun one. I've been there. I watched them play at, they played MTSU last year. So we went down. We got $20 student tickets.
How about that?
We drove down to Tuscaloosa, stayed in a hotel overnight, watched, I didn't know this. We didn't know this at the time, but it was Nick Saban's last home opener ever. Now, looking back, that was really special.
Yeah.
And that.
Did you take some pictures?
Took some pictures.
Yeah, special for you and the Blue Knighted group.
Hey, baby. That's what I'm talking about.
I was neutral. You know what I showed up in? I showed up in my Titans Derrick Henry jersey. Neutral. I'm that guy.
Connor, you can't do that, man.
Yeah, I know.
You can't do that. Come on, man. Has anybody told you can't do that?
Now they have.
Now I have.
Just you.
Yeah.
Can't do that. And number four, it's the Swamp.
Chomp chomp.
Ben Hale Griffin Stadium in Florida.
Okay.
There's nothing like the Swamp.
Yep.
Now, granted, Florida's trending downward.
Yep.
Sunbelt Billy is not cutting it. He's on the hot seat.
Sunbelt Billy.
He's on the hot seat.
But oh, man.
You cannot beat the Swamp in the early 2000s and 2010s either.
Yeah.
It's a vortex.
Right.
It's a penitentiary. You can't win there.
You can't win.
And if you're the Tennessee Vols, you still can't win.
It's what, the fourth quarter they do the Tom Petty? Won't
yeah.
back
oh,
down.
I won't.
Yeah.
I hate that.
Are you kidding me? Tom Petty's like, all right, you know, let's continue. I don't like this.
And
you're making me upset.
This one's for you, Nick, because you said that the Vols would not be in the top five.
Oh.
I'm shocked because they got really bullied out of their ratings. So I was waiting just to be absolutely befuddled by whatever they were going to throw out here.
I'll give credit. This is me making these rankings, by the way. I'll give credit where credit's due. Neyland Stadium is in the top three. Now, they're not second to none because there are two ahead of them, but Neyland Stadium is an electric environment. I'm going this year. I'm going to watch them play Alabama second Saturday of October.
Mm. Congratulations. You've taken too long to get there. You've been here your entire life, Connor. I'm so surprised you've
Neyland
never been.
Neyland is not in Nashville, thank you.
No, I know, but still.
It did take me until about 3 years ago to go to Neyland Stadium. So Connor's around the same age when I went. So
yeah, but right. Fraser, you were baptized into being a big Bulldogs fan, man.
So,
come on.
I'm baptized into being blue. You think I want to go to that orange stadium and not watch my team?
Absolutely, you do. You just ate a donut 2 weeks ago. You should be ready for this.
The donut is not going away.
Yeah, that's going to stick around for a while.
No, it's not because it's coursing through your veins still.
Continue with your list, please. Digestion's the thing. Anyways, At number two, Sanford Stadium.
Ooh.
UGA, Georgia, the Bulldogs.
I like that.
They win a lot. And that's a, I mean, I've never been, but
yeah,
that's, they don't lose a lot.
They don't.
I don't think they've lost there in close to 5 years.
It's been a while.
It's been a while. But at number one, there can only be one.
Oh.
Tiger Stadium.
LSU.
LSU. Not just the most electric environment in the SEC. The most electric environment in the country.
Whoa.
Changed my mind.
Whoa. Now, I can speak on this because I have been to Death Valley in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. I went to go see Mississippi State versus LSU with my buddy Alex. Best trip I ever went on. That place was rocking.
Oh, they're rocking.
We were. It's funny enough. We were sitting at the highest point of Death Valley and just inside of Tiger Stadium. The highest level possible. You could feel it shake. You could feel the stadium
electric.
Shake. I'm like, whoa. Like, it was swaying back and forth. I was like, whoa, 50, we're right on the 50-yard line. Probably row 358 at the very top, and we're just here. We feel the sway.
It's so, I want to go so bad. That, I want to do. I want to do Penn State whiteout.
Yep.
That's electric. I want to do Virginia Tech. I'll have to ask Jake to take it.
Yeah, Jake will get you some passes.
He'll get me. I would like to do the Big House at some point. The Big House, I think, is a bit overrated.
Tad bit.
But Ohio Stadium, or what is it? Ohio State's?
Oh, it's the horseshoe, I think, or something.
Yeah, the horseshoe. Yeah. I do that. I don't think there's anything out in the West Coast.
Not.
Like,
I think I'd want to go to Oregon.
Oregon would be good.
Yeah, I like Keyser Oregon. On this. Oregon would be cool. What about the Rose Bowl? Are you kidding me?
Oh, of course.
I've heard even going to ASU would be really fun too, even though they pretty much suck. But still,
Arizona State. Love it. That was a part of my college football dynasty in NCAA 14 after I left. SMU
I was
certain
considering
reasons for
Arizona
recruiting.
State. Which, by the way, I haven't gotten to say this on the air.
No.
I recently reopened my recruitment for NCAA 25.
Whoa.
Oh, my God. Who cares?
Again.
I care. Why do you have to shoot down everything I say, Nick?
It's okay.
Because this is a video game. I enjoy seeing it in our group chat, but do I really need the commentary that you've opened up recruitment for a fake thing in life?
Yes.
My gosh. What are we doing?
Nick, you have to realize that's the rest of America. They talk about this on a regular basis.
I guess, but I mean, how many 20-odd some people or 20-year-old odd some people are going to be doing this? I know we have a plan as a show, but I mean, this is outrageous.
I'm going to put this out there, Nick. When this game comes out and you see the ratings for the game and you're able to see the money that comes in and the people that buy the game, you will eat those words. I'm telling you.
Negative. Well,
and it won't be bigger than GTA. There's no way.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy. We have a conversation now. We will talk more about this another time. We'll table this. But we'll get to the next part of the hour, and we'll appreciate Newt for his Newt's notes. Anything else?
Some of us appreciate it. Some of us want to shoot it
some
down.
Some of us will talk about fake sports, but the more important sport that has also made some headlines here in Nashville lately would be Nashville Soccer Club.
They did.
Did you just call college football a fake sport and Nashville
talking
Soccer
about
Club?
The video game, video Connor, game. Chill
video.
Out,
video
man.
Game. It's okay.
Oh, my goodness. No, we have actual headlines to talk about because Frazier has been hinting at this for pretty much 2 months that there would be BJ Callahan coming to Nashville, and he's been hired by NSC. He's the second ever coach, so we will be getting to that next. And I am ready to hear the full reaction from Frazier, but also NSC fans. I know there are text lines not working, by the way, so if you have a comment, throw it on YouTube or wherever else you are watching us, or maybe even just listening to our voices this morning. But, yeah, call us in and let us know what you make of the new hiring by NSC. I know Frazier's going to jump in on what he thinks about that hiring. And
absolutely.
I know that there is some, you know, I don't want to call it skepticism around this hire, but could they have maybe waited and gotten a different coach after the Copa America has kind of been, you know, throwing some teams out here lately? But I think, quite frankly, just to tease here, I think there's a good reason that NSC fans should be happy with BJ Callahan. And so Frazier will tee up that for us coming up next year.
Absolutely.
You're listening to Force Company here on 102.5 and 106.3, The Game.